This is a recording of the public hearing on Website and Internet Communications Improvement Initiative held by the Federal Election Commission on July 29, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning, everyone. This will convene an open session of the Federal Election Commission. And I would like to welcome everybody here. I'd like to first begin by introducing the members of our commission, which is on my left, on my physical left, is Vice Chairman Matt Peterson. Farther on my left is Commissioner Hunter and then Commissioner McGann. And on my right, is Commissioner Bowerly, Commissioner Weintraub. This initiative is undertaken by us in order to learn how we can improve our website and our method of communication with people through our internet. The FEC was first constituted in 1975, and the commission launched its first website in 1996. For the first time, we're receiving formal public recommendation on the means by which the FEC uses the internet to disclose information to the public. Our goal with this initiative is to learn how we can improve our website and ensure that it continues to be a state-of-the-art resource for disclosure of information to the public, including disclosure of campaign finance data, information about federal campaign finance laws, and actions of the commission. The issues we are discussing today were included in a notice of public hearing and request for comments published in the Federal Register on Wednesday, July 1st, 2009. As part of this initiative, the FEC is seeking and has received suggestions, recommendations from all segments of the public, including representatives of the political committees, members of the media, members of the academic community, and advocacy groups. The public generally, including many of you, may have turned to the Commission's website in the past and have either found the information was not organized as intuitively as you may have preferred, or unable to access satisfactorily some of the information, or found that some of the information you sought was not available. We have the highest regard for our IT staff and the people who work day in and day out to try and bring to you the best information we have as quickly as we have, as accurately as we can. But we all know that we can all learn from each other. We can all try and do better. There's nothing that people undertake that can't be improved. With all the latest innovations in technology, the rush of data that comes to us, we want to explore ways in which those of you that seek information from us can obtain it as quickly and as accurately as possible and as intuitively as possible. I would consider this, as we would sometimes hear about it in the politics, a listening tour. We're here to hear, to try and to digest some of the comments that we have received and will receive from you. As we read through the comments, I see many of the comments are so practically helpful that sometimes you wonder why we didn't think of it sooner. And then some, of course, are so technical that we may never fully understand them as commissioners, but we are here to get that information and relay it on to those who can. We especially appreciate all of you who are here today and for the others here today who are willing to testify and take time away from your billable hours to help us do a better job. We had some initial plans to meet in a two-day period, but because of a number of other things that we had to do, we are confining this session to one day, and then we'll pick up a second day later next month. And for that, I'd ask the approval of my commissioners to extend the time for written comment until August 20th at midnight so we can get further input and then have a second hearing when we can afford to schedule one. So hearing nothing, I'll ask the General Counsel to, hearing no objection, the General Counsel to prepare an amendment to the Federal Register so that we can give a notice to that effect. I want to also thank personally my assistants, Brad Deutsch and Stacy Shin, Tom Anderson, and my intern this year, Marcella Pacheco, for the work they did to try and help put this together, to synthesize all of the comments that we've received so far on the internet, to make those available to the commissioners. For Brad Deutsch, who prepared the most of the content of the Federal Register notice, became an expert in his own right in the process, and for all the work that they've done to bring this material to the commissioners in an organized way as possible. So we're here today. We're going to have three panels. Thank you for being here. We have Craig Engel from Aaron Fox and an assistant, David Satterfield, who's very welcome, and thanks for being here. Brian Svoboda from Perkins Coie, and of course, Michael Toner, our former chair, and the first person that I was here. He was a chair when I first arrived, and it was always a great pleasure under his leadership to be here as a commissioner during that period. And with him is Karen Trainer, an assistant as well. So for that, what we'll do is we'll ask each of you in alphabetical order to provide us with some initial comments, and then we'll open it up for questions. The concept here is to make it informal, as intuitive as possible, so that just we can ask questions. I know some of the commissioners thought that maybe we'll get hyper-technical, so to the extent you can keep it in layperson's language, that would be great. And we have with us a couple of people on staff who might be able to answer some questions if they arise. So let's start with Mr. Engel, and thanks, thanks for being here.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation to come here and address the commission. This is actually in my 20-plus years in working in election law the first time I have actually sat at this table and addressed the commission. I have often had it address me in ways in which have been positive and negative. But I would tell you that I completely agree with you that I have the highest regard for your IT staff. Your staff in public disclosure as well is a remarkable, dedicated group of individuals. And your mission primarily, as we all know, is a disclosure agency, whether it be campaign finance data or enforcement and regulations and advisory opinions. And without that terrific access, I think that the practice of election law would be suffering. Now, when I talked to your office, I said that, you know, I didn't have many comments that might have been directly on point to the major aspect of this rulemaking, but I did have one thing that's been on my mind for a few years that was somewhat related to it, and your office said that I should come and testify about that and any of the other things. And I think a hearing like this, which is collaborative and certainly not contentious and will lead to maybe focus groups and such, it's a very, very good idea. The thing that's been on my mind for about the last dozen years are the reporting forms that we use as practitioners. The reporting forms that we use as practitioners in developing, you know, our data for you in an attempt for it to be letter perfect. And to illustrate my point about one of my problems about your disclosure forms is I brought an exhibit with me today. This is the disclosure reports for one congressional candidate, for one election cycle. These are the forms that we have used and put our data in for your commission to compile and put on the public record. This is an average congressional candidate. It's a member of Congress who raised about $1 million in his election cycle and spent about $1 million in his election cycle. There are only like 3,100 contributors in here. There are only about 1,100 disbursements in here. But there are 1,760 printed pages in here. And I know we're living in an electronic age, and I know that we're putting data into computers and submitting them to you electronically, and you're able to search them, but every practitioner always generates a hard copy, first for his or her own review, for accuracy, and then secondly for record retention. And I think the problem in my mind that creates 1,760 pages here is that your Form 3 only has 3 entries per page. And I think that if you look at your Form 3, we might be in a more data-efficient age, being able to put more information on each page. I also think that when we were like doing our FEC research and compliance work, when we're going to your website, we're also getting the data from you in the Form 3 as well. So when we're printing things out, we're seeing things that are maybe not as page efficient, or the data displayed is not as efficient as the data itself. Now, I mentioned that this was 1,760 pages, and when you think about 435 congressmen, you're going to get to about 765,000 pages per election cycle, or over 1,300 of these binders spread across the United States or in the offices of lawyers and practitioners. You know, last quarter, there was a Senate campaign who in one Senate report, one quarterly report, submitted an 858-page report. And again, that's because there were only three entries per page. And going back and looking at the Bush-Cheney reports, if you added up the primary, the general, and the compliance, that one presidential committee, 495,000 pages of reports when the data is formatted in the way it is. Now, I know that the current Form 3 with its three entries per page, it's kind of like the great-grandson of the first FEC Form 3 that I remember seeing, and those were kind of big page reports as well because many of them were handwritten at that time, well before, you know, the electronic submission of data. But I will tell you, even the handwritten reports back then could fit 10 entries per page. And then I also remember when we were emerging into the data age that practitioners would come before the commission with their own software, printing out their own pages, asking the commission if these pages would be data sufficient. And you know, here's an example of someone coming up with their own software about a dozen years ago, printing it out, and again, you know, 10 items per page. So I think that there is a level of efficiency that we could create here by asking the commission and its IT and its data staff to review how the good data that you are collecting is available in a good form as well. And when you look at, you know, FEC file, or when you look at Campaign Manager, these are pretty efficient ways of organizing data and displaying data. So although form, I think, is very important, and forms are very important, it's the substance of the data that I think is most important to us. And if we could figure out a way to work together to make that small part of your mission maybe a little more efficient, I would be happy to volunteer someone on my staff to help. Not me, of course, but I'd be happy to volunteer someone. I would conclude by saying that there are many aspects of the commission that I think are operating very, very well. And we always should take a time when you look across the United States government and look at the complaints and failures of many agencies, you should look at your own agency and think that if you're doing this well now, just think how much better we can do when we have a meeting like this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful comments. Very interesting.
Thank you.
Mr. Swoboda.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thank you to all the commissioners and to the staff for having me here today. It's a good thing that I'm not supposed to be here as a technical expert, because I emphatically am not. I'm here as a consumer. So as I was saying earlier before I came in to the meeting, I can't tell you how to make the donuts, but I can tell you what I like them to look like and how I like them to taste. So it's that sort of subjectivity that I think is going to shape my comments that I make to you now. I use the Commission's website for legal research. It's unsurprising because I, in fact, am a practicing lawyer. And so there are certain things, certain traps that I run when I do work for a client that I expect to be able to find and see easily on the Commission's website. So, for example, when I'm researching an issue for a client, I'll look to the legislative history of the Act and see what Congress had to say when they passed it. I'll look to the explanations and justifications that the Commission has adopted over time. I'll look to your advisory opinions as illustrative, predictive to some degree of what you may or may not do if you're presented with my transaction in the future. I'll look to your enforcement matters for the same reason, your matters under review. And in fact, you know, with that in the advisory opinions, not simply the final deliverable of what you churn out, but also it will pain you to hear the deliberations by which you reach these decisions are very important to us to understanding how you might want to do. We understand that there's changes from draft A to the final adopted opinion, and those changes can be significant in understanding why you did what you did. You know, maybe not of any sort of binding legal significance, but they're useful to us. The policy statements that you issue on those odd occasions, short of actual rules. And I say odd, by the way, to describe the frequency, not their content. The statement of others' mileage.
We'll accept that for purposes of the Federal Register.
The statements of reasons that you put out when you close a MER or when you issue an advisory opinion, the audit reports that you issue with respect to committees. Those are the things typically, the basic tracks that I would expect an associate in my firm to look at when they're analyzing an issue for a client. And it's the sort of thing we very much would like to have accessible when we practice before the Commission. And the first bit of good news I have for you is that the Commission's website is an immeasurable improvement to what my life was like when I began as a first-year associate at Perkins Coie back in the Pleistocene era. I mean, it's immense improvement, and our jobs are so much easier than they were 11 or 12 years ago. So with that as background, what are the principles basically that I look for, you know, in your website? How do I evaluate whether the donut is tasting good or not? The first is comprehensiveness. I want it all to be there. So if you're going to present the advisory opinions on the website, I'd like to see all the advisory opinions. I would like to see, you know, the various documents that generated them. But it all should be there. There shouldn't be gaps in certain areas of subject matter that cause you to have to go elsewhere. The second is user-friendliness. You ought to be able to find what you're looking for. So if you do a search, for example, through whatever means, you ought to be comfortable that your search, if intelligently formed, is going to generate the results that you would think it ought to generate. If you don't know enough to do a search but wish to browse, there ought to be a way to browse so that you can find materials through that way if that's a way you prefer to do research. The third is the website ought to take advantage of the unique medium that is the Internet. I mean, they call it the World Wide Web for a reason. Pages are meant to link to other pages. One of the best websites, one of the most fun websites I've ever used, and it was done a long, long time ago, was a website at the University of Texas that was a hypertext version of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. So it printed the entire novel, which thankfully was in the public domain. They didn't infringe copyright. And you could click on a character's name and it would have a brief study of the character. You could click on an anachronistic word that may have existed in Regency England and it would tell you what it meant. It would click on something that was obscure or an allusion to another work that she was making that you might not otherwise have gotten, and it would explain what that meant. So it was a way not simply of presenting the text, but helping you understand the text, and more to the point, directing you to other sources that will help you understand the text. That's something that can only be, that at that time could only have been done on the World Wide Web. It now can be done through other electronic media, for example, Kindle and other similar technologies. But you have a medium here that has that sort of flexibility, and you ought to take the opportunities to use it. And then lastly, the Commission's presentation of materials, and I realize there's some tension between this and what I've said before, it ought to be neutral as to content. When I go to the library, for example, the librarian doesn't grab me by the throat and say, you ought to read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. It's the best book in the world. But I'll know how to find it if I'm looking for it. And if it's a new book, it will be on a shelf with new books. And so the Commission should be cautious to the extent it needs to balance, obviously, with, you know, respecting public interest and the fact, you know, for example, that there may be people interested in certain things you did today, but also with, you know, it also needs to be respectful of the fact that different people visiting the websites are going to have different views about different things. And that's where, you know, for example, you know, the Weekly Digest that you all do is something that that, you know, strikes me as very useful in that regard. I get on a regular basis a list of what you did, and if I want to learn more about it, I can. If I want to tell a client to take craven advantage of it in a demagogic way, I can. It's there for me, but you're not pushing me to do any of those things. So with those as criteria, then how the stuff that I'm looking for, how does it stack up against it? The legislative history, well, it flunks the comprehensive test. It's not all there at present, and particularly with McCain-Feingold, there's a real gap to be done. It seems to me that one high priority for the commission should be to get the complete legislative history of the act and its amendments, including, by the way, the various appropriations amendments that happen to the act from time to time, and get those compiled in a way that's searchable online. The explanation and justification, way better than it used to be, a little weak on the searchability test. And that may be something you can explore different technical means of solving that, but one thing I would note is that with your later explanations and justifications, you have the capacity for word recognition through Adobe, so I can click on a particular word and find it in the E&J if I'm looking for that. That's very helpful. Advisory opinions, very helpful. Perhaps in my life, the aspect of the commission's website that works the best, but there are issues with comprehensiveness. It would be nice to see those older for older AOs, the agenda documents and the comments back and forth. And again, in terms of taking advantage of the medium, one of the suggestions that I made in my comments was having links to the agenda documents or having links to the streaming audio of the discussions. I mean, I'm not going to say it's an easy thing to do because there's an employee in the commission whose life will be hard once they're told to do it. But, you know, compared to some of the other things that perhaps you're asked to do, a relatively easy thing to do and perhaps a good frame of mind to be in as you're working with the website going forward. The MERS. It seems interesting that among all the practitioners, or at least those whose comments I've read in the rulemaking, everybody seems to think that the enforcement query system is unwieldy in terms of searching, that it's impossible to type a search term and get something that it resembles what you're looking for. You either get zero documents or you get 115,000, and you know, not even partners at law firms like to have their associates bill that much time working through that many materials. Statements of reasons. This is one area where I think the commission needs to have some sort of presentation of these on the website. For example, you know, one of the perennial favorites in our line of work is the glorious, you know, Mason, Wold, Sandstrom, Elliott statement of reasons on the Dole audit. Rulemaking is the sole means of, you know, establishing regulatory norms. I don't know where to find it on your website. I don't know if it's there anymore. When David Mason was a commissioner, it was there. It was on his website because he helped write it. But now he's gone, and as near as I can tell, it's gone. So bring it back. Bring all the others back, even the ones that maybe aren't as useful to me or that I can't cite as often. And then lastly, the audit reports, and here others will...
Doesn't Carl Sandstrom have a copy of it? Can't you walk down the hallway and get it from him?
Carl's cagey about that sort of thing. He's circumspect in talking about his past official experience, as he should be. And then lastly, the audit reports. I agree with the other commenters that there should be a more comprehensive library of those available on the web. So those are some impressionistic comments, again, from a consumer of the site. It's meant to provoke thought and just give you a sense of how one person uses your site. And hopefully there are others who share my experience as well, and I'm interested today to hear the experiences of others. And thank you for having me.
Thanks. That was very, very helpful. Mr. Former Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you and your fellow commissioners and the commission's professional staff for holding this hearing. I think it's a great opportunity for the agency to build on the tremendous progress that's been made on the website in recent years. I want to emphasize that my colleague Karen Traynor and I are testifying in our personal capacities and not on behalf of any of our fortunate or misfortunate clients, depending upon their situation. But I guess I won't repeat everything that we provided in our written comments, but I do think that there's an overarching principle that could guide the agency in this endeavor. And I think that if there were an overarching principle, I think it could be to do everything possible to level the playing field in terms of legal research for legal practitioners and political committees across the country. Brian was talking about what it was like in his early years at Perkins Coie, and I can have a similar experience when I started out in this field. You know, if a client called at 7 o'clock at night and had a legal question that actually needed an answer that night, you had some trouble.
If you wanted to figure out what the agency had said in an advisory opinion, or if you wanted to pull all the MERS that were on point in an issue, you literally had to send a runner down to this office and go through microfiche and go through hard copy records. And that wasn't possible at 7 o'clock at night, then or now. So I think the fact that we do have these online capabilities is tremendous. When you're talking about committees that have time-sensitive questions, they're looking to comply with the law. After all, they called you, and they've got something that needs to move in real time. And I think that the overarching principle that I think could guide the agency is, what steps can you take in this area so that committees that are not as well off financially, maybe don't have the resources to hire law firms in Washington, have access to the same kinds of information as the committees that are here and the committees that are able to hire these Washington firms. I say that as a member of a Washington firm, but I really think this is an important part of your mission. Because as you know, so many political committees, whether we're talking about in the House of Representatives or other types of committees, operating on shoestring budgets, do not have the resources to hire counsel here in Washington. They might have a pro bono lawyer who's helping them with a MER, or they might have a volunteer counsel who's helping them with an advisory opinion. And do they at this point have the same access to the same kind of information as the committees here in Washington? I think the answer is no, they don't. And I think that you are in a position, perhaps over the next couple of years, to change that situation so that in broad measure they would have access to the same kinds of information. So I think that could be one principle, sort of a leveling the legal research playing field for committees across the country. The other thing I'm very sensitive about, having served at the agency, is that there's constantly competing demands for your time and resources, and I respect that, and I understand where you're sitting. And so it is always a challenge of identifying what are the key things you really want to move on now, not 18 months from now, not 3 years from now, right now. And I think that that's a personal judgment that all of you are in the best position to make. But I would recommend serious consideration of identifying the key things and setting public deadlines for doing them. You've had so many good ideas here from all the commenters, but what do you think you could achieve, for example, between now and the end of the year? You know, what do you think you could achieve between now and the end of next year? You know, these are windows of time, 5-6 months in terms of the end of this year, you know, nearly 18 months in terms of the end of next year. That's achievable. You know, it's not 5 years from now. It's not murky. It's very concrete. And what are the key things that you think you could collectively decide you want to do during that period of time, and publicly announce it and make it happen, which I recognize is easier said than done. But I think that in the past, the agency has done a great job of pulling together in some of these projects and making it happen. When you set those types of aspirational goals that on the one hand are ambitious, but on the other hand, feasible. And I recognize that that's a delicate line to walk. And in the written comments that Karen Traynor and I submitted, I mean, we touched on a couple of different things, but I do think there's a couple of things that stand out. I agree that the MER database is a crisis. You know, it does not work. And it's vital that it does work. If you're a political committee in Peoria, Illinois, and you've got 5 days to respond to an RTB finding, and you've got a volunteer lawyer who's doing the best they can to help you, they've got to have the ability to access your precedent on the same level as committees that are here in Washington. Right now, that is not the case. And that's fixable. I recognize a lot of resources and a lot of time and investment that would need to be made in that area, but I don't think you could do anything in the legal research area that would be more valuable for committees in middle America than doing that. And if, for example, you felt like between now and, say, the end of next year, you could do that, I think that would be a tremendous deliverable for committees across the country, so that they would be confident that they have an issue in personal use, or they have an issue in terms of corporate contributions or conduit contributions, whatever the issue may be, that someone who is helping them wherever they may be sitting, if they have access to a PC, can get access to your precedent, I think would be enormously helpful. Same thing in the advisory opinion area. I understand that all the commission's opinions and the concurring and dissenting opinions are available online, but not all the background documents back into the 70s and 80s. I think that's another example of a concrete deliverable that'd be very helpful. Maybe set a deadline to try to do that. Say, look, we're going to do this by X date, end of this year, whatever you think is feasible. But it's a great example of something where you've made a lot of progress. You're not that far away from finishing it. you know, building consensus to finish it and announcing that you're going to finish it. And I think the other thing that really stood out is the audit reports. You know, right now they're available online from the 2000 cycle forward. But, of course, there were a lot of vital audit reports on both the Title II side and the Title 26 side that were issued in the 90s that are of important presidential value. Similar situation. If you decide you really want to get all those reports online and have them be text searchable across reports. My understanding is right now if you want to look at an issue, a common issue among multiple audit reports, you cannot do that. Now, you can look within a particular audit report and do some text searches, and that's helpful. But let's say you want to see how the agency across time has handled something in the Title 26 side. You can't do that right now. The ability to do that would be very helpful in the audit process, whether you're a presidential committee, you know, taking public funds on the Title 26 side, or you're a political committee on the Title II side. I think that'd be really helpful. But in closing, I understand the constant challenge of competing demands for your time and resources, and I suspect that has not changed in recent years. But I do think that if you decide that there are 4, 5, 6 key things that you could do, that you set public deadlines to do them, and you sit down with the professional staff and you say, hey, you know, can we make this happen? How can we make this happen? What do you need to make this happen? And go do that. Because I think the agency's had a terrific track record in the past doing that. And I think that in the areas that we're touching on here, it could be tremendously useful for practitioners. But I think more importantly, for political committees across the country that are trying to cope with what I think all of us agree is a very complex regulatory scheme. They don't have the resources to hire high-priced lawyers. Giving them the tools to try to do that, I think you have the ability to make that happen, which I think would be a lasting and valuable contribution. Well, thank you again for allowing me to testify. I look forward to your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. That was also very, very helpful. I'm pleased to announce that probably be today or tomorrow we will let out a contract to put all of the MERS online for the last 24 years, and from the first 24 years up to 1999. And if I understand it correctly, that all of the people who've responded to our request for proposal are willing to and able to get it done within 120 days. So by the end of the year, all of our MERS should be online and pretty searchable to the extent that they are. We're taking them off microfilm. And as a result, there may be some loss of searchability in some regards in terms of quality. But that's a start. And also with respect to admin fines, we've got an estimate of, I think, $55,000 it would take to put all our admin fines, which is 1,700 of those, online before the end of the year as well. So your comments are well taken. Audits, the balance of the AOs, those are things that we certainly need to work on. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to the commissioners to ask some questions, and we will proceed informally unless otherwise it doesn't seem like a good idea. So are there any commissioners who'd like to start off with any questions or comments? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I really want to thank the witnesses, all of whom are old friends, and it's really delightful to see you here. I can't believe, Mr. Engel, that you have never actually been here testifying in all this time. Well, it's about time.
Thank you.
I guess it's something that that Michael said that triggered this. Your focus, not surprisingly, as practitioners, has been on how political committees and people who are trying to help political committees are using our data and how we could make it more successful for them to use it. But, you know, we've had some other comments that say that our primary focus ought to be on helping voters to get better information or helping the public to get better information on, on who's giving and who's and how the money's being spent, and we should add links to other kinds of voter information. And I wonder if any of you, I guess I would start with you, Michael, because you raised the suggestion, how you think we ought to go forward in trying to evaluate. How do we weigh the different kinds of concerns for different consumers of the website, given that different people are going to have different, interests, and we're going to have, as you well know, IT can just soak up a limitless amount of resources. And whenever we have extra money in the budget, it's always, wow, what's on the IT list of projects they've been waiting to do? Given that we're not going to be able to do everything, how do we evaluate the competing concerns of, you know, voters versus reporters versus and let me give a shout out to Ken, who not only shows up to all our meetings but actually filed a comment in this case, which we appreciate. You know, the voters, the public, the reporters, the academics, and the political committees. How do we juggle all that?
I think it's a good question, Commissioner Weintraub. I always thought that there were four key constituencies for the agency's website. You have the general public, you know, the electorate. You have the media, you know, who's covering money in politics. You have academia, and you have practitioners. You know, there's obviously more communities beyond that, but that if it's possible that those four are the paramount ones, and they definitely have different needs and interests. I think that's absolutely right. One approach might be and I think what was great about the comments you received is that you really had commenters from all those constituencies. You know, this panel focusing on the practitioner side, and other panels focusing on the academic side, and the press side, and the general electorate side. And it may be possible to identify four key recommendations from each of those constituencies. And I recognize that there could be some tension between them, but that maybe it's okay to recognize that they will be coming from different vantage points. And maybe the practitioner side will not understand the academic side. You know, I think Michael Malvin's comments are really detailed on the academic side, and that might be okay. You know, that they're coming from different communities, and so maybe one goal would be on the practitioner side. You know, what are the three or four key things that you know all these practitioners have been emphasizing would be helpful, and then do the same thing with the different communities. The other thing that I think you have a great opportunity to do is in terms of the commission's compliance seminars, to put those online. I think that'd be tremendously helpful, and it would also hit multiple constituencies. Obviously, the practitioners and the committees, but there might be other users of the website that would be interested in that. And what a great chance to level the playing field for people who can't, you know, come to D.C. or wherever you're holding those sessions. I think that's a great opportunity for you.
And I think that we have started to experiment with different ways of using more video capacity and more video is old technology, but other forms of technology for the people who can't make it to the conferences. I think that's well taken.
Other comments? Yeah, Mr. Spobeda.
Yeah, my initial reaction is obviously all of us with different perspectives, we're all equal before the commission. So the commission can't say lawyers first or press first or academics first. The question is, how do you kind of triage these issues? And the first and foremost criteria, it seems to me, is accessibility. If, for example, campaign finance data exist on the commission's website. Everything that's been filed exists on the commission's website and can be gotten at if in a little unwieldy fashion or perhaps in sort of a confusing fashion. I mean, you're at least part of the way there. But if, you know, MER 1343 is not on the website, it's not on the website. I'm not going to find it. I'm not going to know it exists. Nobody else is going to find it. Nobody's going to know it exists. And the reverse is true as well. I mean, if there's a chunk of campaign finance data, you know, somehow that's not available, not accessible, not open to, you know, manipulation or downloading, you know, to the public, that's an issue too. So the first criterion I think I would probably look at it that is, you know, what's not there that ought to be there that people have a demand to get and that you can give them? Because that really is at the core of that's at the core of the problem. There have been people in the past who have been able, for example, with campaign finance data, to take, you know, downloads and make it, you know, very user-friendly and very manipulable. I continue to lament the demise of the FEC Info website because for, you know, 7-8 years it was what I used all the time when I was trying to find out what a donor, you know, had given. I think it's a gap right now in the private sector, at least that I see, that I wish that somebody in the nonprofit community, frankly, would fill. Should the commission fill that gap? I'm ambivalent about that. There's part of me that thinks you're well positioned to do it. There's part of me also that thinks, and I think maybe the better part of me that thinks, that your task at the end of the day is to make the data available so that others can present it, manipulate it, make their arguments based on it, you know, and give people the freedom to be able to do that. But accessibility is obviously at bottom. If it's not accessible, nobody can do anything with it at all.
Any comments? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have much because I read the three-year comments and a lot of it hit home because I had experienced many of the same frustrations with the particularly the MERS search engine, and I really just thought it was me. I thought I just didn't know how to use it. I was bad at research and would have to remember old MERS in my head, but it's good to see that I'm not the only one. But you raise a good point about if you've been doing this a long time, you tend to remember, oh, there's a MERS somewhere that sort of talks about this. But if you haven't been doing it a long time, there's no way you're going to find any of this stuff, right? Particularly statements of reasons, particularly some of the golden oldies that talk about different procedural thresholds and that kind of thing. And if you've been around, you know them. If not, you don't know them. And you, two of you have worked here, and you know we all know Michael was the chair, but Craig was in the general counsel's office for a brief period of time, and then worked for a commissioner years ago. So he's seen it from the inside, sort of before the technology. The thing that struck me about how this place processes information tends to be in the order of the regs, not by topic. Now, as practitioners, am I correct in saying that you really don't think in terms of reg sites? You think in terms of concepts. Like if a client wants to do a mail piece, you think about all the legal issues that come up for a mail piece. It seems to me, and I don't know if this would help, but if you had some sort of annotated code where you actually cross-reference things more, and hyperlinks is the obvious example, but could you just share a little bit maybe anecdotally about the process of being a lawyer and how dealing with how the commission views its law is not really the way people in the field deal with the law, because I think you guys would see things much more topically, and we don't really seem to do things topically here. You have the AOs on one part of the site, you have the MERS on another part, and there isn't a lot of sort of cross-pollination that, to go with Michael's point, leveling the playing field. Somebody outside the Beltway trying to figure out where the commission is on a certain issue has to really connect a lot of dots and know where some of the dots are before connecting. And is that a fair assessment, and any sort of constructive ways to develop that to try to bring a little more cohesion?
I think it's a great idea, Commissioner. A couple things, and I think we've all experienced this. I remember that a lot of time and energy spent on in the CFR book, the subject matter index, which is near and dear to all of our hearts. That's a tough project, right? You're trying to, first of all, have a usable index that's not 60 pages long, but also one that hits the subject matter topics that are relevant to people and the cross references, and I've always viewed that as a work in progress. It's something that every couple of years is important to turn to and update that index, because I think we've all experienced the situation where, geez, I know there's a reg somewhere on this. You know, where on earth is it? And I thought it was 114.1. You go there, no.
And you actually chaired the agency, so if you're struggling with that, imagine
it's embarrassing for me, right? Yes, it's
well, it's embarrassing for me because I'm currently on the agency, and there's times where I know there's a reg somewhere.
And he wrote a bunch of those regs too,
right?
And it's amazing what you forget how rapidly.
Some actually think I don't really read the regs, but I actually do. I'd like to be able to find them. Sorry.
So that's where the subject matter index is so valuable. But you go in there and does it cover the waterfront? So I think two things that I always thought would be helpful is every cycle, every 2 years, to do a systematic upgrade of that subject matter index that's in the CFR, because I really think it's a valuable tool. But the other thing, Commissioner, I think you're getting at is, I don't think the agency's ever thought about, can we have a subject matter roster of key issues, top 50, 75, whatever number we would all agree are the really top subject matter, personal use and straw donor schemes and other types of key legal issues, partnership contributions, the real conundrums that have created problems for people, and do a holistic, integrated database where you could touch on those subjects, get the relevant regulations that bear on it, the E&Js, the advisory opinions, the MERS in one place. That would be so valuable, as opposed to, well, I know there's a MER that was on personal use, but I can't remember the number. So I think it's a great idea. But if you feel like you don't have the resources to do all that right now, one starting point might be to dedicate an effort to upgrade that subject matter index in the CFR, because that's where everybody's fallback is. At least that's where my fallback been over the years when I have no earthly idea where the reg is.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I think also you have to design the site to accommodate both linear and nonlinear forms of research. So, for example, if I know what the reg is, I ought to be able to go somewhere, click on the reg, and find all the advisory opinions, all the MERS, all the statements of reasons that pertain to it. But I also ought to have the capability to be able to phrase a good enough search term that I can think by analogy and compare and find authorities that may be related, even if they're not exactly on the same subject. And that depends really, and this I'm straying into an area where I don't know how it's done technically, but it depends on how you kind of frame your search engines and how they're structured and set up. And I think it's part of the reason the enforcement query system is so frustrating, because you can't really articulate, you know, a search that yields a usable result. I began practicing law, you know, kind of at the dawn of LexisNexis, and I've always been kind of, you know, dubious of online research, because you'll search for what you're looking for and you'll find exactly what you're looking for, no more and no less. And that's the problem with any sort of search-driven technology, and it's why I wouldn't encourage the commission to rely solely on that as a means of searching materials. I'll give you one example where I think, you know, that I would find useful. I'd like one place on the web where there's just a list of all the MERS, and I can just, like, click on one. You know, I can see them all listed from, you know, MER 1, you know, involving Fred Flintstone, you know, to MER, you know, 6242, you know, and I can click on any one of them and pull up anything. And, you know, just having that sort of basic library there, I think conceptually is helpful and strikes me as also kind of an easy lift, you know, to do. Easy compared to other things, perhaps, that you're being asked to do.
Well, Commissioner, I have to agree with you that I personally take a conceptual approach to much of my practice in this area, but also in other areas, whether it be tax or real estate. The issue often isn't the regulation, but it is the concept or the question. I think that as a practitioner, people come to us not for information. They come to us for judgment, and that judgment is on the basis of experience and working with the information. They come to us with a question not about a regulation, but about a task that they would like to undertake. So we are very subject matter oriented practitioners, as opposed to necessarily information or regulation specific practitioners. I would add one thing to what these two have said, which is you don't have to do everything yourself. It's not this governmental agency's responsibility to shoulder all of this. I think that those things which are core improvements to your mission is what you should focus on, because part of it's our job as well. Part of it is going to be our job as practitioners to keep up with this ourselves, monitor it ourselves, and make sure that our own internal libraries and minds are kept up to date, and that we do work as well. And there are also other groups out there, nonprofits and watchdogs and academicians, that might be able to do things with your information that are more optional or exotic in the way in which they want to operate it. So I would choose things that you believe are the core foundation to disclosure. I would choose them also on the basis of the subject matter that you're talking about, but also choose them knowing that other people will be doing things with that, exaggerating that information or formulating it for you in ways in which others might be able to use it.
I'd be interested to know, just let's talk to our EQS system for a few minutes and ask you to comment on that. There seems to be fairly general dissatisfaction with it, but what is it in particular that would say 5 or 10 things we could think of right now to start working on with our staff? I know that surfaces a lot.
I'll be brief, Mr. Chairman, and I confess that my technological knowledge is next to zero. My colleague Karen Trainer is light years ahead of me on those issues. But I mean, the two things that have been
I noticed that you and Mr. Engel both refer to the assistants with you that really know what's going on in the technological field. So
I suspect
if we get to a focus
phenomenon
group, they'll be invited.
I am under oath here, aren't I?
That's right. The two things that I think my sense is most frustrating is, first, obviously, not all the MERS necessarily being online. So you have that, you know, a breadth issue. But perhaps more challenging is a sense that the text search function does not operate in a comprehensive manner. So that even among the MERS you have online, if you want to get all hits for MERS concerning personal use, you put personal use in, you don't get all of those MERS. That fundamental problem Or you get things that don't relate to personal use. So I think it's twofold. First of all, I think, and the chairman indicated that I guess a serious, I mean, the contract's been approved to put all the MERS online. I think that's tremendous. I think a parallel challenge would be, what could you do to improve the searchability function? Because I think that's vital. If you're a practitioner in Middle America and you're trying to get up to speed on you know, the precedent on issue X, that you have the ability to pull up the MERS on issue X. Right now, I just don't have a sense that's possible.
No, yes, I agree with that totally. And to illustrate the problem, I mean, let's say, for example, you had a dispute about contribution limits in a special election. How would I find that in the enforcement query system? Well, in a perfect world, I type special election in the search field, you know, whether, you know, through some sort of Boolean form, you know, in quotes or with a plus sign or something like that, and I generate some universe of MERS, you know, many of which may not be responsive, but some of which are, and with a reasonable amount of work, I could find the authorities that are on point. I can do that, in fact, with the advisory opinion search system, and it works reasonably well. If I did that now with the enforcement query system, and I wish I had a laptop with Wi-Fi to try it, maybe I should pull out my BlackBerry and do it, I suspect I would get like 142,892 documents. And it would be, I'm exaggerating for effect, but it would be such a long list that it would be impossible for me to cull through all of those and find anything that's responsive. And that's the problem you have, which is you just have no efficient way to search the system. You can't do it through word searches because it yields either too much, you know, hardly anything, or incomplete results, as Michael said, or there's no way to browse it unless you want to enter the numbers sequentially, MER1, MER2, MER3, and read them all. And there's just no other way to get at the information. So that's the task for you. It's how to organize it in any way, really, that helps you get at it.
And I think an interrelated issue, as we said in our written comments, you know, sometimes what you do as a fallback is, if you don't think the text searches, the phrases are working, well, why don't we do a reg site, right? Yeah, I mean, I know 110.11 is what I'm interested in. Let's plug that in. Sometimes that'll work pretty well, but as our written comments indicated, we played around and had some reg sites. 104.3D4 is one of our favorites. No hits, and you know that can't. How can that possibly? No hit. Literally no hits. So is that a functionality challenge? Is it the fact that there literally are no hits for that? So I think it's an over-inclusive, under-inclusive challenge that's on the table.
It's also how the search dialogue is phrased. I mean, so for example, you have a field for respondent last name and first name. Well, what's the last name of the National Republican Congressional Committee? I don't know. I mean,
you type in mine, usually.
I have to remember that.
Mr. Rangel, do you have some thoughts on that?
I quite agree with Michael and with Brian. I think that the advisory opinion search engines are very, very usable. I find them to be the place where I go first, and that often then triggers thoughts about where I should go, maybe in a more specific way in enforcement. But I have to tell you, my first point of entry is always with the advisory opinions.
I agree with that point, and for some reason, the AO search engine has always functioned at in a far superior level in terms of text searchability. And I've always had confidence that it really does a great job in delivering the hits. And maybe that's because more of the AOs, when you began that process, were already in a Word, you know, digital format, as opposed to the old MER documents that weren't. I don't know, but for some reason, the AO search engine you have now is far ahead of the MER search engine.
And that goes for the AOs way back. In other words, it's not just a matter of how they were copied and put on and digitized or anything. It has to do with the actual search engine that gets the job done. So if you took that search engine and you combined it with MERS and you had a topical index, you might really get somewhere. Mm-hmm. Or, and then statements or reasons, of course, and bring those back out of the graveyard.
Agree. Okay.
That's very helpful. Other comments? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a lot of questions to ask, other than to say that the comments that you submitted in written form and what you've presented before us today is extraordinarily useful and very much appreciated, and lends perspectives on these issues that on the inside, where we generally can find what we need, although sometimes we've even found that can be tricky for us. But to hear it from the perspective of those who actually have to deal with this in representing clients, this is extraordinarily valuable. Let me also commend the chairman for his leadership on this issue. Certainly, the website is our most effective tool at conveying the widest array of relevant data to the interested constituencies that Commissioner Toner mentioned. And so, anything we can do to improve that vehicle, I think, is a very worthwhile investment of our time. The chairman mentioned how we're expanding the MERT database to include every MERT that goes back to. Well, basically, since the agency opened its doors, we're also looking at this current time at the possibility of video streaming, so that people through our websites could view commission open meetings and hearings in real time. There are obviously expenses involved in that and some logistical hurdles. Mr. Swoboda mentioned this, having some sort of streaming audio is something that would be useful. I was just wondering, I just wanted to get your thoughts on how useful of a tool would that be to have live streaming video of commission meetings and hearings.
I think you have to look at us instead of just hear us.
Well, first off, having suggested the streaming audio, I'm alarmed that you responded so quickly that you're doing it today. I may need to revise and extend my comments depending on how this experience has gone. But it'd be immensely useful. I mean, for example, I wasn't able to attend your meeting yesterday. There were subject matters you took up that I was interested in. I honestly don't know for sure what you did and have no real way of knowing other than reading a BNA this morning or talking to someone who was there. I mean, and sometimes, this is the case for almost everybody with business before you. They can't come here because they live in Lincoln, Nebraska, or they live in Denver, Colorado. So having some economical means for them to know what you did today is a good thing to have happen. And streaming audio actually may be the cheapest and most efficient way to do that. Again, I'm straying into areas I know little about. But, again, it goes with Commissioner Toner, said. Make a list of what's achievable. The perfect doesn't have to be the enemy of the good. As much as we'd like to see you, hearing you might suffice. So I think it'd be immensely useful, particularly for the open meetings.
Yes. More interesting on the closed meetings.
That would be interesting to hear. Yes, the executive sessions. We'd love to hear that.
No, I don't think so.
I share Brian's comments, and I think those audio pods that I can't remember what year that began, where the the open meetings, there were audio pods placed on the website. I thought that was a tremendous improvement because, as you know, as practitioners, getting a sense of the points that commissioners and staff are emphasizing that are not apparent in the final documents. I mean, we know we have the agenda documents, we have the final approved documents, but where are our different colleagues on key points? And then when you're trying to advise clients about the risk matrix for different things they're thinking about, that's really vital. And so I think those audio pods were a great improvement in getting so that no matter what time of day it is, you can, if you know there's an AO that you really care about, you can go ahead and dial up that oral debate. And same thing on the rulemaking side, which I think is really helpful.
Mr. Baskin?
Just as one follow-up on that, at this point, we just had a Finance Committee meeting recently to talk about this issue, and we're trying to take this issue obviously, in a perfect world, we all want video streaming, and it's an aspiration that I think many of us have had. But we're trying to take it out of the aspirational realm and actually start to try to figure out what sort of concrete steps we can take in order to make that a reality. Because I do think that would be an important service. I know that when I was up on working up on Capitol Hill, working on oversight committees that oversaw the workings of the agency, that there were many times you couldn't leave the Hill, and there were many times when I was a little bit frustrated about the fact that I couldn't see what was going on. Maybe it was a hearing on maybe back during some of the rulemakings or a crucial AO was being considered. And so I remember from the outsider's perspective how useful that could have been. And now that I'm on the inside, we're trying to take some concrete steps to make that a possibility. I mean, there obviously are resource issues and there are some logistical hurdles we're going to have to overcome, but at least get us on the pathway to providing that capacity for practitioners, for the general public, for the media, for everyone who may be interested to see what happens in those meetings. So, thank you.
Mr. Donner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think another thing that's advantageous by the timing of this hearing, of course, you're coming to the end of your fiscal year on September 30th. To the extent there are any dollars that are there and available to you, you know, sometimes I remember sitting in your chairs that it was advantageous to focus on, okay, well, what could we do between now and September 30th in terms of outlays? I mean, if we've got, you know, $50,000, whatever it may be in your budget, by September 30th, that you earmark that for projects like this. You know, and that if you've got the next fiscal year starting October 1st, going to the Hill and saying, hey, we'd really love to do these two things. Here's our best estimate of what they'd cost, and we don't want to do them 5 years from now. We'd love to do them in fiscal year 10. And sometimes, everything being equal, that can be a little bit more effective in terms of trying to get that line item from the Hill. But I do remember there were at least, and Commissioner Weintraub, you might have a better sense of this, I remember there was at least a fiscal year or two when we served together where it was about this time of year, we were the last couple months, we knew we had some dollars, you know, obviously not as many as we'd like, and then setting the priorities to spend them. So I think the timing of this is really good from that.
Well, you're right. We're going through that exercise right now. So it is a good opportunity to take a look at some of these things that maybe the so-called low-hanging fruit that we can actually get a figure on before the end of our year.
You know, if I may, Commissioner, to respond to the Vice Chairman's question about audio or video, you know, one real quick workaround, I don't know how easy it would simply be to post the audio of the meetings more timely. I mean, even, you know, like same day or next morning, if that's possible. You know, I mean, from where we sit as practitioners, obviously we want to know what you do as quickly as possible. And, you know, that may be one way without busting the budget, you know, where that can be done.
One of the things I realize is that, you know, one of these is a commercial software system that I've learned to use since I never learned to type very well. And since now I'm working for the government, I don't have secretaries to take dictation. So I did learn that they have this dragon naturally speaking. I'm just throwing that out. And we could maybe figure out a way to convert that to, you know, somewhat primitive text and get it out fairly quickly without the expense of a court reporter necessarily. Some things like that we might be able to do. Also, from the ABA, some of the things that have been successful for us, and I'd be interested in your comment, is telephone conferences on hot topics and what things might mean, so that if you can have a telephone conference and you can get CLE credit for legal practitioners on, what does Citizens United mean? What is the impact of that? When the case comes down, how does it affect where we're going to be going forward? For example, or things like that, where it's not expensive. Anybody can hook in from any part of the country. They can get an hour and a half of a conversation from learned people on it, and really get a sense of where the law might be going in a fairly quick way. I mean, does that sound interesting, or would that be helpful to you?
I do think that sounds interesting, and one of the things that I always thought about when I was here was that, you know, we're not alone here at the Federal Election Commission. There are hundreds of different government agencies and commissions sitting in meetings like this all across Washington, maybe the United States, asking questions of themselves like we're talking about right now. The Internal Revenue Service is one that has done a remarkable job, in my opinion, over the last half dozen years in improving the information that is available to taxpayers and tax practitioners. The forms that they've generated, their ability to have both formal and informal methods of communicating to taxpayers and tax practitioners has increased markedly. So if there is ever a way in which this agency can talk to that agency and bounce your problems off of them, and vice versa, I think that that might be a very good way in which you could improve some of the operations that you're talking about. You're not alone.
Mr. Svoboda.
No, any time in our line of work where we're able to hear what you all are thinking about an issue or what your staff are thinking about an issue in that sort of context is immensely useful to us. I mean, realizing that you don't make law when you go out and speak at a conference or something like that, still it's a window to how the agency's approaching particular issues that sometimes it can be a wake-up call to us. Sometimes it can spur us to think on an issue that we hadn't considered before. You know, sometimes, you know, we'll hear something and think, you know, boy, you know, could that possibly be right? And we'll want to follow up on it. But it's a fascinating thing to have happen. It happens frequently at your training seminars where subjects will come up and it will just, you know, spur us to thought on a particular thing and cause us to gut check something or to, you know, realize that maybe an advisory opinion is in order on something. Or it's having that sort of dialogue is just immensely, I think, important to creative thinking for us and for the other people who, you know, have business before you. And to the extent that those opportunities can be expanded, I think that's all for the good.
I agree with Brian's comment, particularly this idea, definitely experienced this over the last couple of years. Well, I thought that was settled law. And maybe you go to a PLA conference or you know, setting like that where commissioners or representatives from the council's office are talking, and it's apparent it's not so settled. You know, it's an issue that's very live, and you won't pick that up by reading the reg book or the advisory opinion process. And so I agree, any mechanism you can create where more of that is accessible as a practitioner, because again, I think Craig was making this point earlier. A lot of times we're hired for judgment. And do you really want to go there on issue X? If it's settled law, well, so be it. If it's not so settled, your view might be quite different in providing the advice. But the other thing that I thought was always very helpful, and the council's office did this over the years at the commission's seminars, was the recent developments module. You know, it was maybe an hour discussion of court cases, and certainly while I serve, there always seem to be court cases, you know, of some judge throwing something out or upholding something. And so it was a very live area of the law where for an hour you could really get a feel for how the agency viewed the court cases on the reg side, the constitutional challenge, of course, to the statute. And the chairman was talking about, well, what about having a conference call, an hour conference call, maybe every couple of months for people to dial in. I think that'd be enormously helpful, and it might be no more duplicative work in terms of what you present at those seminars, because I always thought that recent development section was very informative for people.
Well, I think the comment you made about the videoing our seminars would be very helpful. That's really leveling the playing field in a big way, because not everybody can go to Chicago or San Francisco or come here to set aside 2 or 3 days, maybe half of which is really of interest to them. So further comments? I can't believe we're at the end of this, but let me ask one more question on you made the comment, Mr. Swoboda, about the library page and how that you said, for example, the commission's library page should be easier to find, and what were you thinking in that regard?
There are certain things on the FEC's website where you really have to work to find them. I mean, for example, one of the attorneys in my office, as a joke about a month ago, sent an email saying we should have FEC scavenger hunt. You know, have an item and try to find it on the website. We may yet do that.
Finds it, gets a prize.
there's some statements of reasons I'm looking for, but the library is one of them. I'll be blunt about how I approach the webpage. You have a nice big screen, and I probably pay attention to roughly 18% of it. It's the bars at the top, and it's the bars on the side. And one of the ways in which you have the site organized right now is that it's very it's very layered. You click on one link to get to other links, to get to other links, to get to other links, and it is not always the most accessible way to organize or find information. So there's a couple ways to do that. I mean, the first, I think, is to think creatively about how you're organizing the site simply from an appearance, you know, perspective. You know, the strong axis of your site right now, the place where a person's eyes would normally be drawn when you go to the web page, that right-hand side of the screen, you know, is the Eastern United States. And I suppose that's useful if you want to see Olympia Snow's campaign finance reports. You know, it's less so if you're visiting the site and you're wanting, you know, to find, you know, wanting to know immediately, you know, what's there. Another way may be to simply think about what are, you know, higher priority, where most of the people who visit your site, realizing that they assuredly are not always going to be lawyers, or even most of the time be lawyers. What do they most likely want to go and look, and where do you put it where it's most convenient, you know, for them to find? And that's where maybe thinking about the buttons that you have right now on the left-hand side and thinking about how those, you know, might be refined would be a good thing to do. I'll give you another example in that same vein. I was struck, I think it was in Larry Norton and Jim Call's comments, where they were talking about how a conversation with somebody in the information division saying, when I want to look at an FEC report, you know, I click on campaign finance reports and data, and I click on the tab for, you know, view images of campaign finance reports. And it rang a chord with me, because that's exactly how I look for the data. I know there are other people who search the data differently, and sometimes, and I've met some of them, they don't find the data they're looking for because it's organized in four or five different ways, and you're not always getting, you know, everything you want to see. Whereas, you know, if I want to see the FEC report that a candidate filed, you know, at least I know, you know, exactly where to get it. I'm not sure it's intuitive to somebody else visiting the site that they would know exactly where to get it. And it's that sort of thing, you know, not simply with the library, but also perhaps with the campaign finance reports, that it's worth doing some brainstorming and thinking, you know, what is it that people most immediately want to see, and how do we help them get it most quickly?
Commissioner Hunter had a comment, a question.
Just two quick points that for consideration. I remember when the agency launched the web crawler function. I can't remember what year exactly that was. It was sometime in the last few years, and I thought that was a really positive development. I recognize that there's often differences of opinion about, you know, what is sort of the equivalent of FEC breaking news, or there are editorial judgments about what to put in that crawler, and I do remember some lively debates about what ought to be on that crawler. But I'm a big believer in the crawler, I got to tell you, because I thought it was an important function. If every couple of days there's something that, you know, there's upcoming filing deadlines, there's a court case that just came out, there's a hearing like this being scheduled, whatever the case may be, it helps drive traffic to the site when you've got things in real time that are recent developments or things that are coming up. So I would encourage greater use of the crawler, although I recognize that it leads to debates about what you're going to include in the crawler that have policy overtones, and not everybody will always agree on what that ought to be. The other thing is that I really do appreciate these Friday summaries of the agency actions, which I know, Mr. Chairman, was initiated during your chairmanship year, particularly the fact that it's not limited to what happens on the advisory opinion side or the enforcement side or the regulation side. It's seemingly a compilation of everything you do for the week. And it's one-stop shopping, right? If you're a practitioner and maybe you're out of town for a couple of days, you've sort of lost track of when was that last open hearing, you've got that Friday email that allows you to really get everything that happened. And then you can click on and get the background documents if you're interested in what's going on. I think that's a tremendous improvement. I would definitely continue that kind of a process. And Friday, I think, by the way, is a good day for it. I mean, it's a natural day, right? I mean, you have your open sessions on Thursday. It gives you 24 hours to put that together. And, you know, sometimes nothing better than heading into a weekend and do some light reading of Federal Election Commission actions. That'll get you going on a Sunday afternoon. But I think that's been a real improvement, and I definitely would continue that going forward.
You know, Michael makes one comment that it reminded me of something, and it's important, I think, as you go in this process to keep your eye on the ball. I mean, his notion that you prioritize the, you know, five or six things you really want to do and the time to do them, and then discuss, you know, how you do them. I mean, focusing your decision-making process that way strikes me as something that's a really helpful thing to do. Because one pitfall that people fall into when they talk about redesigning a website, and I say this as somebody who's practiced at a law firm where we've done that, who've been involved in private organizations where we've done that, is they can be the subjects of intense, divisive debates, and it's because there are elements of that where everybody's opinion is as good as everybody else. It's pure subjectivity. So I was on the pastoral council of my church, for example, and they were putting up a website, and we spent 2 hours discussing whether the site should read St. Anne's Roman Catholic Church or St. Anne's Catholic Church. Do we spell Saint? Do we abbreviate it? And I thought, well, why don't you just look at the bulletin and see what we're doing now? But that's the sort of pitfall that you can fall into with this sort of debate. And I would urge you to be cautious about it. Think in terms of broad goals, what you want to achieve, and then how to do them. And don't be lured by the siren song of, you know, should we have a mauve background or, you know, red, white, and blue or... Just a thought that was spurred to me on the subject of the crawl, where I can imagine, you know, if I were on my law firm, on my technology committee, and we had a crawl, we'd probably have bitter, long debates over what ought to be on the crawl. And at some level, it doesn't matter as much.
The old law firm debates, I do remember those. Thank you, Mr. Hunter.
Thank you, and thank you again to all three of you for being here. We are hoping to publish a notice of proposed rulemaking for what we call the Shays 3 litigation, hopefully within the next month or so, sometime in the near future. And as you know, that's going to include coordinated communications, federal election activity, and state party fundraising. It's going to be voluminous, and we're hoping to get a lot of comments from the public on this. So I'm wondering if there's any advice you have to us that the FEC is not already doing in NPRMs that might help people provide thorough comments. Maybe that includes adding more information, you know, on a certain part of the web page, more legislative history, the court cases, or things that would help you to do the research more quickly, or hyperlinks, or anything that we're not already doing. We may be already doing everything that you think is useful, but it's going to be a pretty substantial amount of pages to look through.
Well, Commissioner, that's sobering. as someone who will probably be looking through those pages. I think two things. I mean, I think that there obviously is going to be tremendous anticipation about what the agency is contemplating in the coordination area and the federal election activity area, given that the law has been in such flux over the last 5, 6, 10 years in those areas. I can't think of anything technologically. I think that the one thing that I kind of learned the hard way when I was at the agency is the importance of having at least enough weeks for a comment period. I remember thinking, and Commissioner Weintraub and I would work a lot on this, you know, we can have an hearing in 4 weeks after the NPRM. Well, you certainly can have a hearing in 4 weeks, but that doesn't mean it's going to be that informative. When people don't have time to, particularly if you're talking about a lengthy NPRM and a lot of complex issues. So I think I kind of learned the hard way that sometimes building more time in the front end of a process like that can lead to better written comments, A, and B, more people will, you know, able to come in at oral comments and perhaps a better end product at the end of the process, particularly when you're talking about a high stakes rulemaking like coordination. But I can't think of any technological redesigns. Brian, maybe you are,
You know, the chairman threatened to let us ask questions of the other witnesses, so I'm going to take advantage of that. I'd be interested in the former commissioner's reflections on his experience in managing volume in two very controversial rulemakings, the internet rulemaking and the political committee status rulemaking, where, if memory serves, the agency received like 103,400 comments and 103,189 of them, you know, were from people sending identical emails. So you've had experience in managing the volume before. I'd be interested to know your thoughts on that.
I think a couple of things. Part of it goes to the technological issues we're talking about, but part of it we're sort of diving into, you know, rulemaking strategy, which is a whole other issue. And I think that I remember we would set goals of not having the NPRM be longer than X pages. And you know, oftentimes a strategy is that if any commissioner wishes to have comment on an issue, that you accommodate that, right? But the only problem with that is it's going to lengthen the document because there's more issues that people want to consider. But I have to tell you, at the end of the day, in terms of managing those processes, I was a big believer in that. Because it's easier to build consensus on an NPRM if everybody has a stake in it and everybody has the ability to get comment on issue X, Y, or Z, even if your other colleagues, and I certainly had this, thought you were crazy to seek comment on that concept. You can't be serious that we're going to do that. But it's a way to kind of take the edges off of that kind of project. But I remember when we did the political committee rulemaking and our website was on the verge of crashing, given the number of comments we were getting online, I guess, the emailable comments. But I have to say, I mean, I think technologically the agency hung in there under a very difficult process. And I think the same thing on the coordination, too, the second version of the coordination rulemaking, where I can't remember the exact number of comments we got, but we got a tremendous number. But I have a lot of sympathy for all of you in terms of trying to manage this coordination rulemaking, given how complex it is. But I am a big believer in inclusiveness. I mean, I have to say, particularly when you're just trying to get consensus to get a document out. And if you have more time in terms of the hearing time, you know, in other words, it's going to create a longer document. So people who want to provide you testimony are going to have to read through those 18 different proposals or whatever it is that you end up building consensus on. But you'll get better comments if you have more time for that to happen. I kind of learned that the hard way, to be honest with you. You know, the idea of having a hearing 4 weeks after you send out an NPRM, I think is tough. But I'll defer to my colleagues if they have different thoughts on that.
We do have to draw to a close in a few minutes, and I did want to call on Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for coming and sharing your thoughts with us. I don't actually have any questions. I appreciate my colleagues' questions and the thoroughness of hearing about your perspective. And I just wanted to make one comment that I particularly appreciate the sort of the breakdown that you had, Mr. Toner, of the different primary constituencies, particularly, I think, relevant for the website, because I think you're right that sort of the general public electorate has a different goal. They might actually want to see the maps on the first page, and that might be the most useful to them. So I think our challenge is figuring out what are the most critical aspects that we need to update and improve for each of those sets of users, because they do have such very different perspectives, and we do have to balance that. But I do also share your view that it has improved a great deal, and I think some of the improvements that you've noted are the work of, you know, the hard work of our staff in consultation with many on the outside. This is the first time we've done this in a hearing setting, but of course we've gotten there's a webmaster email, and I'm certain that many have taken advantage of the opportunity to send in their thoughts to the commission, even when we didn't have this open process in a meeting form. So appreciate your time today and your comments, and particularly take heed of your advice that we need to figure out how to balance all of those constituencies.
Thank you. Well, we are at the end of our time. I do want to thank you again on behalf of all of us for being here and for giving us this great input. And those voluminous volumes are something that I'll never forget. So that was a nice piece of visual support for your.
On the internet, they're only 2 inches tall.
But you're the first formal panel we've ever had on how to improve our website. It was a great start for all of us. And again, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We'll reconvene in about 5 minutes.